ProFlowRadio.com.
You are now tuned into the Pro Flow for Show Show, internationally syndicated, act like you know, with your host, Mr. Mad Max. Pro Flow for Show, www.maxheat.com.
Pro Flow for Show Show, wireless phone interview feature presentation. Pro Flow for Show Show, Pro Flow for Show Show, Pro Flow for Show Show.
Check this out.
Yeah. You know?
Hit it with Fofo Flow.
The internet's audible hotspot.
Yeah.
Please enjoy this Verizon ringback tone while your party is reached.
What's going on? What's going on?
Hello. All right, Mr. Melfi, I just want to thank you again for the time that you have set aside for this interview. Let's see. So I'm speaking with Mr. Pat Melfi, Starpoint Records CEO, five-time promoter of the year, as well as former vice president of MCA Records. Just wanted to welcome you to Pro Flow Radio Show. And how are you today, sir?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for asking. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm just excited to be on the phone with you. Just want to make this go as smoothly as possible. I have a lot of questions for you today. The first thing I want to do is give the audience your website. I believe it's musartworld.org.
Yeah, that's M-U-Z, like zebra, A-R-T, world.org.
Okay, and if you don't mind, could you briefly explain the purpose of the MuseArt Foundation?
Well, the idea is to provide a comprehensive education program for children in public schools around the world, you know, starting with the United States of America, in the area of human development, music, arts, entertainment, you know, combining intellectual property, entrepreneurial skills, and international business types of programs and curriculums. One of the things that, I guess in summary, it sort of is like putting education, entertainment, and technology in one place for children to learn. Originally, we had, an opportunity to put some serious product out. So when we acquired a significant catalog for the purpose of funding MuseArt. And the idea was to integrate. You know, one thing that needs to happen is that the general people, artistry is artistry. And, you know, and artists need to be focused on their artistry. And one thing that happens is they become social gurus, if you will. All of a sudden, they, you know, are involved in their mechanism on Facebook and, you know, and iTunes and all this other stuff. And before you know it, they're spending so much time doing that, that their artistry is being distracted. Our job at Starpoint is to provide a vehicle for them so that they can focus on writing their next song, creating their next record, whatever it is they want to do, you know, enhancing their tour and getting out in front of the consumer and connecting directly to the consumer. We play a lot of games. Like, you know, we offer free music to, you know, to get people an opportunity to learn about a band. But back in 2005, I had an opportunity to acquire a significant music catalog. Classic music, stuff like Billie Holiday, Sarah Vaughan, Lena Horne, Al Jolson, just amazing stuff. These were recorded masters. Some of them were original, some of them were re-records, you know, in the days when we as record company labels would own everything. These fellows would end up broke after, you know, 20 number one songs. They would still be working in a car wash someplace or something, you know, because they were not savvy enough to understand what was actually being done to them and,
right,
you know, with their masters. So there was like 14,000 masters of this caliber that, you know, had been landed in a bankruptcy court. And
wow.
we went in to acquire them. And of course we demanded that, you know, we're going to use this for our charity. We're going to use this to make our charity money, and we're going to preserve the integrity of real music with this product, and we're going to have an opportunity to show children, you know, what was Lena Horne about? you know, and you know, what was Count Basie about? You know, I mean, where they didn't go in and, you know, put a computer mouse on a note and move it around. They went in and they re-recorded when they made a mistake,
right?
You know, and there wasn't any disconnect in human emotion. You know, there wasn't any foul language being used. There wasn't any degrading lyrics being used. There wasn't any of that. It was like the real deal. So we acquired this thing, and we paid a significant amount of money to get it. And it came, you know, with full clearances from the bankruptcy court. You know, like, nobody can ever come after you for this. You own it. It's your deal. There's no past-due royalties. There's nothing. So that was kind of cool.
Awesome.
And then our goal was to remaster these products. For example, you know, we're having a conversation with the Grammy Award-winning band Champagne to record with Lena Horne. So,
okay.
For example, do you remember when Natalie Cole did that with her dad's music with Nat King Cole? She went in and created Unforgettable. She walked into his masters. She sang on them, and then, boom, they remixed them, and then it sounded like they were both in the studio together.
Right.
And it sold millions of dollars worth of product. So we want to take undiscovered artists as well as artists that are accomplished, like the Grammy Award band Champagne, that has, you know, had a little bit of a history, you know, with top songs, and then walked into an environment of education, which is where they preferred to be, and now are back out on the street looking at, you know, what can we do to enhance muse art. And so we want to take their skills, go into you know, stuff like Stan Kenton, the Mills Brothers orchestrated pieces of music, and then come back out with them on those masters, and then create new product where the money would center into muse art. So, I mean, you may have White Christmas by Bing Crosby, but I guarantee you don't have White Christmas by Bing Crosby and Martina McBride, you know, and that kind of a thing. So that's kind of where we got into the conversation, and that's how Starpoint Records was actually born.
So Starpoint Records was basically, in a way, a tool for the Muse Art Foundation.
Absolutely. Every product that we put out on Starpoint Records will have some relativity to Muse Art. And that's why we, you know, when we structured everything, we said, okay, well, here's Muse Art. And Muse Art wants to use music to save music, so it needs a vehicle. The vehicle that it needs can't be, you know, Pat Melfi Records, or, you know, it can't be Juice Newton. It has to be cool, because it requires a label to move forward with the distribution. So, I mean, you can't distribute. I guess you can now, but in the onset, you know, iTunes required you to be some kind of a label.
Right.
So you had to have something. So we structured Starpoint to be that vehicle. Like, it would take these 1,000 songs, and it would take any new songs that came in from the artists or whatever, and it would bring all of those things through Starpoint. Starpoint would be eventually transferred into the Muse Art Foundation, and the Muse Art Foundation would actually own Starpoint Records. And then the Platinum Music Libraries would own the content. My goal is to take all of this content that I acquired with the president of MCA Records, my partner Bob Seiner, and donate it to the Muse Art World Foundation, so that some form of legacy is left behind. And then, let's say, for example, we go into we're doing a project right now. We're in discussion with Peter Frampton about a project. And because we have some masters that we own of, you know, of his work, and I would like to create, there's 996 artists in this catalog, and they're all number one artists.
Wow.
I want to create, a Peter Frampton scholarship. So what is a Peter Frampton scholarship involves? Well, if you fancy the guitar, obviously, Peter Frampton is, you know, known for his guitar work. You know, and you know, if you're talking to me about Teddy Booth, well, then, you know, you're talking to me about somebody that is very sensitive, and he fancies saxophone. You know, so we want to create all of these scholarships that are in the name of these artists. So what I've been doing is my other partner Philip, we've been rolling around, you know, getting involved in conversations with these folks. that had lost these masters along the journey, and we were offering these masters back to them in some way. So, you know, we own 100% of a master from, let's say, Peter Frampton. We say, come and endorse MuseArt, and we will create a scholarship in your name, and then we will also have you participate in the ownership of the master with MuseArt. It's very cool. I mean, we're having
fun. Yeah, you're covering so much ground. It's like you're saving music in schools. You're also, you know, it's like covering a lot of different things. You talk about it so calmly, but this is major, and this is extremely broad and developmental for humans. It's just amazing. It's amazing.
Well, you know, Michael, it is very broad, and the more that I unfold it with my group, the more I realize that this is a music education referendum. This is a movement.
That was one of the strongest things that stood out to me in the mission. I'm looking at the website, MuseArtWorld.org, right now. And the human development, music, arts, entertainment, intellectual property, entrepreneurship, international business. All these things are developed when you are teaching music education to these children. They're able to develop their overall productivity in the world, become systems that can give back and understand and comprehend and, you know, just have emotion and everything that works hand in hand. How did this come about? Like, was this just your dream? Was it
You know, I've been doing this. I've had a long history in the music industry in various forms, and I have early on, I had a dream of creating a music educational system based on the philosophy that if you teach your child how to read music, that they would have a 30 to 40% higher reading comprehension versus a child that wasn't presented with that opportunity.
Wow.
And then I expanded that, and this data is supported. There isn't an educator or a human being walking that could not go to any university anywhere in the world into the music department and pull that fact up. It's a fact. Okay? I mean, it just is a fact. And it's one of those facts that we just tuck under the carpet, you know, and nobody talks about it because it's a significant tool. Well, then I expanded it out into the inner cities where I thought, you know, it's a crying shame because I was raised in Brooklyn, New York, which is considered a, you know, an inner city now.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, well, why should an inner city child, because their family, you know, isn't wealthy, you know, why should they be sacrificed? And why should money be an issue in their world? If there's a child that we can take off the street and put his life in order and get him away from gangs and get him away from degrading lyrics and put him into some kind of a music program with like a real music mentor, why should money be an issue like that? I mean, if God came down here right now, I wouldn't want to be the one who would have to be answering for that situation. You know, and I mean, at the end of the day, you know, the scripture says, you know, the meek shall inherit the earth. Okay, so all these people with all this money who don't do anything in life for humanitarian people, especially children, you know, at the end of the day, they're going to face their maker. This is a call to action. Okay, our goal is to create a music and arts curriculum that is literally mandated into the United States of America's education system. And that's the message. The call to action is, you know, get off your butt, put $5 up, because, you know, you probably throw $5 away every day of your life.
Every day.
And put it into this cause, and then the finale is to measure the results. So if we find one child in Chicago, Illinois, that, you know, turns in his gun and puts down his violent attitude that he's been taught, and we put him into something, and we hammer him in with, you know, here's Count Basie, or here's, you know, Peter Frampton, and we get him involved in music. I'm almost going to, you know, I can't, you know, project that kind of a guarantee because I'm not like Houdini or anything, but I'm almost going to promise you that child's life will, you know, will take a turn. And I can document this, okay? Because, I mean, I did a test in Los Angeles.
Yes. Yes.
Where we entered into, you know, the criminal justice system. And, you know, and we walked around the criminal justice system and we said, okay, here's the story. you know, if your child was involved in, let's say, holding up a 7-Eleven store, you know, he does his time, he pays his fine, and he's on probation for a little bit. Well, right. Now we want him to do his time, pay his fine, do his probation, and while he's on probation, study music for 2 years. And they looked at us like we were smoking crack, man. They were like, are you crazy? And we were like, you know, we're going to push this through, okay? We're going to mobilize Los Angeles, so you might as well get used to it. We're going to push it through. And we got it through. And then after it hit 10 years, they came back to us and they said that 98% of the children that have ever gone through that reformation program never returned to the system. And I was like, well, I said, well, welcome to my world. Education is the answer. What is the question? Mm-hmm. And people were like, okay. So that's how it started. And, you know, I mean, so as a young boy, I had this philosophy. I knew as a young boy that I was, like, different. I never thought that I was special in any way, but I knew that I was different. And I knew because of survival, you know, I needed to survive in the environment that I was in all of my life. So I, you know, latched on to this, you know, person called God. You know, without going religious on you, I felt...
Yes, I understand. Well, I'm definitely there too myself, so go ahead. It's no problem.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, so God, you know, and I had a little conversation, you know, and he was like, you know, if you'll commit to me and you'll keep me at the focus of everything you do, I will lead you and train you to do one of the most amazing things that the planet will ever see. And I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. You know, that's kind of a cool promise for a kid to get.
Right.
And I think it was about like 10 or 11 when I had that conversation. And then, so I spent time floundering around, you know, just like every other kid. I went through the journey and I moved off the path. And, you know, we all tend to turn our eyes toward God when things are not right. And then, you know, I mean, the ones of us that can accomplish keeping our eyes focused on God during times of comfort rather than times of controversy, those are the ones that can actually get something done because they know that their creator is at the helm here. So one day, you know, I just decided I would go do my thing and I graduated from Berkeley and I did my thing and I ran out and I did the whole drug thing and I came back out of the drug thing and then I started doing touring and concert touring and, you know, got involved in all of that stuff. And I just never seemed to find satisfaction in any of those things. I mean, I was tour managing the Eagles and I was tour managing, you know, Tom Petty's band, and the country band Alabama was the closest thing that brought me to a reality because there was real stories being told. Not that there wasn't for the Eagles and Tom Petty. I mean, obviously those are very nostalgic bands, but there was a lot of other things going on that just didn't fit my Christian values. And so I moved forward to one day I finally decided, well, it's time for another conversation with God. And so I had this conversation with God and I told him I was going to quit. I was done. I was tired and I don't want to do this anymore. And he just sort of laughed. He was kind of laughing at me. And I was like, what are you laughing at, man? And he's like, you got no idea what I got in store for you. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, I got these three grandbabies now, and I want to watch them grow up, and yada, 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 yada. And he's like, well, that's fine and dandy. However, I was like, if you're going to do, you're going to make music and arts a part of education everywhere. And I was like, what? I mean, I literally was having this conversation with God, and I said, man, I don't know what it is you're on, but whatever it is, you better turn some light on here, dude, because I'm not thinking that's going to happen.
Right, you know? And,
you know, I was like, are you kidding me, man? That's huge. Where are we going to get all the money, and where are we going to get this?
Right.
And I was like, I just thought he just asked me to do, like, the most impossible thing in the world. And I was like, oh, man, are you kidding me? And then all of a sudden, you know, I get this feeling of comfort, you know, and this voice, you know, and he just says, look, everything that you need to do this with will show up when I'm ready. And the key to that was when I'm ready. So he didn't say when you're ready.
Right.
He said it's ready. I'm ready. So we had to learn right there that we could do this, but that it would be in God's time frame, not ours.
That effort in there.
Yeah, yeah. So I moved on, you know, and I called Ken and I told him what was going on, and he was like, "Oh God, here it comes." I was like, "Okay." And then I called Bob, and he was like, "Oh God, here it comes."
Right.
So I took it to them, and I just said, "What do you think?" And they said, "Well, it's huge, dude. Are you kidding me? That's huge."
Right.
And he goes, "But it's awesome." And I said, "Okay." So then, will you help me? And they all said, "Yeah, we'll help you." And so, you know, I've done so much work for children all my life anyway. I mean, I've been the president of Child Health. I've been involved with St. Jude's Hospital forever and a day. You know, I'm involved in various crime councils around the United States to help children, you know, with alternative solutions. That's just me. That's who I am. And
it's
so,
it's funny because the world thinks people like you don't care. You know, they think that you guys are just at the top and nothing else matters.
That's where I think I differ, Mike, is that I believe that God is at the top and that I'm on the ground where you are. And I'm at your side. I'm not on top of you. I'm not better than you. I'm not better than the next guy. I promise you, you put your pants on the same way I do, one leg at a time. And so I don't elevate myself. I do not elevate myself anywhere. In fact, I'm really kind of shy that way. It's my friends that really know me well. Because he's just so humble and so modest, and he has no, you know, flair, and, you know, he doesn't believe in that he's any different than anybody else. And you know what? I know a lot of people that have a lot of money that feel the same way. You know, it's not, I think that it's important for people that are involved in what we are doing to understand that truly God is the CEO of this. Okay. And that he is just rounding up his little soldiers and saying, "Hey, guys, you know, let's go do this, and you're skilled in that, and you're skilled in that." You know, the Each One Teach One project that you were beginning to mention there?
Yes, sir.
That was the inception of the whole thing. That's how the dream started. There was a little boy that we were managing, we still are managing, he's on our website, and we were looking for songs for him. So I put out a word to a lot of my friends and, you know, in the industry, and then Bette Midler's producer came along with one of his songwriting gurus and that have had, you know, I don't know how many songs out there that have been top ten songs. And he came with this song, Each One Teach One. And I was like listening to this song, and it had this line, "Each one teach one, find a way to reach one. We could make a difference in this world." And when that line crossed my path for the very first time, I had this vision that just started to take place, and then it moved into the second verse with the same thing. And what took place there was a vision of all these kids singing that line. And I was like, wait a minute, each one teach one. And I started factualizing again. I moved away from the creative side, and I was factualizing, and I was saying, oh, wait a minute, that's right. We as parents have stewardship and authority over our children, and we can communicate with them and dictate, if you will, some form of, you know, camaraderie or some form of education or some kind. We can give them something, and they will listen to us for a certain percentage of time. And then we get over to Grandma and Grandpa's house, and it's, you know, it's a little bit higher of an authority.
Right.
And Grandma and Grandpa can get in our face a little bit, you know, at a higher level. But then when we get with our friends, I was like, wait a minute, man, peer-to-peer mentoring. Because our friends, you know, I mean, I just remember as growing up as a kid, my mom and dad, if my mom and dad were doing it, it wasn't cool. You know, if grandpa and grandma were doing it, well, it was definitely not cool. You know, but if my friends were doing it, it was cool. So I thought,
right.
Okay, wait a minute. So then I started thinking, okay, wait, if we take the minds of children, when we blend a social message to them, you know, that and teach them that they can make a difference in the world, but it's not going to happen with, you know, these artists out there that are throwing degrading lyrics at them. It's not going to happen with violence. It's not going to happen with bullying. It's not going to happen with guns. Nobody wins in any of that stuff. You know, we know that, but we got to get these kids to be the ones to teach each other that, you know, that's just not the way that it's not the human way to solve problems. You know, we all have them. We all have problems. We all have inhibitions. We all have things that we work on in life. But, you know, unfortunately, we don't get that information till we're older. And, you know, somehow I kind of think that God should have given us that information first so that we could go out in a young stage and do things and then, you know, lose it or, depending on our performance, we get to keep it, you know. But right. Instead, we come here with no knowledge, and then we have to gain knowledge and move forward and then create impact on the world. So that's how the song came about. And so I went to Nashville, and I was, like, carrying this little bag of tricks with me. And I don't even know how it happened. Somehow, Fred Bolander and Chuck Butler, who produced the Backstreet Boys, you know, they were like, what are you up to, Melfi? And I said, you know, I'm thinking about retiring. They go like, yeah, so what are you here for? You know, don't give us any crap, dude. You're not retiring if you're here. You know, because they used to always know me in Nashville as the guy who would just drop in, you know, and do whatever. I mean, I did all these tours out of Nashville, but I never, you know, I would just not go there. I don't know. I never connected really well, you know, in Nashville. I was an LA boy, you know. I kind of...
Right, I understand that.
You know what I'm talking about. So, I always thought that, you know, Nashville had, like, a significant discrimination in music, and in music, you know, because I felt that, you know, they had their own 50 little players, and they didn't let people come in, and they were really, you know, niched out and all that crap. So I didn't really take on to that. But anyway, I find myself there, and Chuck is now a producer over at Sony Music in Nashville.
Okay.
And so, you know, after he rouses me up for about 20 minutes about nonsense about, you know, what are you doing? I said, oh, well, you know, I just came in to get an opinion on a song. He's like, you're so full of crap. You know, like, what is your deal? I said, well, will you just listen to this song and tell me what you think? And so I let him listen to the song, and he was like, all right, what are you and Craigan up to? And I said, We're not up to anything, man. Craig is retiring. I mean, he's 74 now. I'm going to be 60. I mean, we're not interested in anything else. He's like, yeah, so what are you doing with this song? Man, I don't know. I was just thinking that maybe, I don't know, just maybe. Maybe we should do something like We Are the World for kids.
Yeah.
And he was like, dude, I'm in. Because I'm in, man. He had no idea where I was going, but he just said, I'm in. And he goes, what do you need? I said, well, I said, this song sounds like a church song. I mean, I had a little 5-year-old girl that sang it on the demo that I got. I didn't care. Okay. I was listening to the words. We had Natalie Silbar, who is the daughter of one of the writers, was 5 years old when she recorded this song for her daddy. And wow. And yeah, and that's what I took with me to Nashville, you know. And I said, it's got to be cool, it's got to be hip, it's got, you know, we need all kinds of versions. You know, we want to do remix contests, we want hip hop stuff, we want rap stuff, we want all kinds of stuff. But right now, I just need something to work with, and yeah. I can't work with this. So he said, okay, great. So he goes, I said, what do you charge me to do that? He goes, we'll talk. And so we didn't even get into that. And next thing I knew, I got this Pro Tools session of what you hear on the websites and where various places. Uh-huh. And I was like, okay, so what do I do now? So I was like, I go back to God and I said, so what do you want me to do with this stuff?
Right.
And he says, well, find kids. And I'm like, dude, where am I going to find kids? And I remembered that we had the one kid that we were managing, Jalen. And I said, okay, well, let's get him. So he started with him. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Mike, these kids started coming out of nowhere. I don't even know how they got there. I had a little Afro-American girl that was being produced by Leanne Rimes' producer out of Austin, Texas.
Wow.
And she comes to me and she goes, Mr. Melfi, she goes, I want to share something with you. I love this song, E-Twin, T-Twin, and I'm going to record it. She goes, I got to ask you a question. She goes, I was doing some studying in school about, civil rights and Dr. Martin Luther King and stuff like that. And she goes, and I'm every day in school, all of a sudden, in the last 2 years, I'm having all these conversations about racism. You know, and I said, you know, okay. And she goes, I don't know why. She goes, I suspect it's because we have an Afro-American president now. She goes, but don't you think that we're going backwards? And I said, honey, we are way backwards. We are so backwards. I said, what is your point? Now, this is a 15-year-old girl, Mike.
Yeah.
and she's like, well, I wrote this song, and I wanted you to listen to it and see if it could become part of the Each One Teach One project.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, okay. I said, okay, well, good. Send it over to me, honey. So she ships me an MP3, and I'm listening to this MP3, and I'm like, are you serious? And she's talking. The message is, isn't it time that we all went colorblind? And I was like, holy, that's amazing. So I told her that she could, you know, we would include it on the album when we get around to doing that in 2013.
Yeah.
And she said, cool. And then somebody else came, Karen Taylor Good, who's a top songwriter out of Nashville, came with this song about, you know, wouldn't the world just be a much better place if we were all a little kinder? And so then the idea started to unfold that what if we had all these children on a stage? They all had various talents, and they all came out and they did what they did, and we pushed these social impact messages.
Powerful.
Wouldn't the world be better if we were all kinder? And a little 8 or a 10-year-old is pushing that message. And then at the end of it, then you bring them all together with this huge choir, and they do Each One Teach One. Right, and they just push
you. Vision. That was great.
Yeah, and that's what I had happen, and that's exactly how it happened. And I was like, "Oh wow, this is awesome, man!" And I just went to my knees and thanks to God, saying, "Dude, I get it," you know. And I was like, "I get it, man." I gotta find the money now. I gotta find the money." And he's like, "Just relax." Okay. Then the next thing that happened was, who cares about what you just got? Who cares about what you just got? And I thought about it. Well, I know who cares. She's 35 years old. She's a mom.
Right.
You know, dads don't care. They care, but they don't care. They'd rather see the kids play football or basketball.
Exactly.
Or something. That's kind of my say. You know, but moms. So mom is the target. I was like, okay, wait a minute. How do I get 350 million Americans? And boom, it opened wide open. And I was like, okay, that's where we need to be. So this message now has been fully developed. We have kids on this song. I got kids from Ireland. I got one from Japan. I got one from L.A. One, obviously, you know, the one from Dallas who started the colorblind routine for me. She's on it. They're all on it now. And we still a demo. We haven't even really gone in and fully produced the thing. It's just a demo. And people are going like, dude, this is an amazing song. And I'm going like, yeah, it's got that We Are the World thing. And so we want to raise money now where we can, you know, get a video, and we want to get, you know, the song produced. But it's not like the immediate goal. Our goal is to get MuseArt going, because MuseArt can fund all that if we get people to focus on MuseArt. So I found the vehicle, and I was like, okay, God, thanks, man, thanks. So the goal is that MuseArt became the number one. It was the endowment fund. Okay, so it's like the bank. You bring all the money to MuseArt, and then MuseArt creates all these scholarships. You know, it creates the Peter Frampton scholarship, the Michael Jackson scholarship, creates the curriculum, does all those kind of things.
Right.
Starpoint is a distribution vehicle. CME becomes the producer.
Consciousness Entertainment, Malia.
Yeah. Malia, you know, comes along with an amazing heart to be the producer of Each One's events across the planet. And because it fits her mission with Conscious Music Entertainment wants to, you know, move away from violent lyrics that are being displayed. And, you know, and actually there should be a movement just on that, to be honest with you. But that, and so she can, you know, accomplish our mutual mission, because I'm partners with her in that. We can get that mission done through the production of Each One Teach One. And then so everything just kind of fell into place in front of my face. And the only thing that didn't fit right for me was, like, I was like, man, can you move this thing any faster? It's like taking 2 years. Like, what the? And he just revisited with me and said, I told you everything you need would happen when I'm ready. And I was like,
got
oh,
right.
There's that. Yeah, I was like, oh, man, come on, man. Cut me some slack.
Right, right.
Like, no, he wants the infrastructure in before, you know, we go off and do this. So I think that that's really the goal now, is get the infrastructure in place, which we have, and get all the players on the team in place. Now we have all of a sudden all these major artists coming out. We've got, you know, conversations going on with the Grammy Award winning Nashville artist Deborah Allen. We've got Chief Newton talking to us. We've got Peter Frampton talking to us. We've got the Champagne. I mean, those good dudes, man. I mean, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I was like, how about us? I mean, come on, man. There's a lot of 30-year-old babies that are here because of that song.
That's right. I'm one of them, you know?
Yeah, there you go. We feel very blessed now.
I'm amazed. You know, I kind of got lost in all the information because I was just in awe of in the parallels that you're speaking about. You know, I never really heard a person speak about, you know, having conversations with God and them, you know, getting the blessing and then talking to him again, other than myself, of course. But if a school wants to have a music education program like MuseArt to help with that development, how would they go about, you know, getting that started?
Well, they would contact us, and then we would, you know, we have a consulting company called Landmark Consulting, and it's part of the Right to Succeed Foundation. And basically what we do is we look at what's going on, we evaluate what's happening, we go in and mobilize the community.
Okay.
And then we'll come in and actually design a plan, mobilize the top 50 significant players in the community, the leaders, the community leaders, the dignitaries, business folks, the educators, all of that kind of stuff. We'll take the top 50 into a community, and we will mobilize a plan, and then we teach them how to rally up the troops, so to speak, at a local level.
Yes.
To put it back into the program. It's sort of like we go one city at a time and get it done. And then before you know it, there's 50 cities done. And then when there's 100 cities done, we're going to just take it and ram it down Washington, D.C.'s throat, kind of a thing. I mean, I don't want to say that in a public interview, but, you know, but I mean, that's pretty much what we have to do is, you know, we have to come from the grassroots level and come back up. Unfortunately, all we have to demonstrate the power of that with is stuff that, you know, was violent, you know, like the civil rights movement, and, you know, the riots of the 60s and the protesters against the Vietnam War. I mean, we don't have, you know, a whole lot of positive stuff. I mean, Ken obviously has, you know, Hands Across America, where, you know, people looked at him and said, you're going to do what? And he said, oh, man, forget it. You know, and now, you know, he just walked away because he figured out the people's, like, whatever, you know. And then he finally found the 50 people that they could believe that we could mobilize, you know, that many people to stand across America and hold hands to feed the poor.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, it's that kind of a movement. USA for Africa, you know, I mean, he did amazing work there. And then the We Are the World thing, I mean, he did amazing stuff there. And, you know, and it was industry leadership. So, you know, what I'm thinking it needs to happen here is that my job is to get the American people on board. And then once that's done, we get the industry leaders on board. And together we can do anything we want to do in the world. And that is not even a doubt in my mind. So, I mean, I know that this is going to happen. There's not even a question in my mind that this will happen with this group. We have an amazing group around us right now. And Malia is probably one of the most amazing people that I've ever met in my life. And she's so dedicated. She's one of many on our team. So that's kind of how we do it.
It would be amazing to see all these powerhouses in one room with so much humility as well. It's definitely a miracle. I wanted to read a statement that's on your MuseArt website. It says, "Our cause is for everyone who believes art and music was important to them as a child, as they learn to live in this world and develop skills as learners. If you believe that music and art were valuable parts of your educational makeup, then help us restore and preserve this marvelous educational heritage. If there was anything else that you would want the audience to know about MuseArt, push the movement in general, each one teach one, if they've missed anything."
I believe the most significant thing they could take away is what they're capable of doing. Mm. Right now, we are living in an America that is somewhat feeling hopeless.
Yes.
You know, I mean, the United States government is running rampant, and it doesn't matter if it's President Obama or President Bush.
Right.
It doesn't matter. I mean,
right.
The bottom line is that we as a society allow this stuff to take place. So, and then we get to this hopeless sort of area in our life, and we're like, what can I do? How many times have you heard somebody, when you were discussing some kind of a situation, somebody say, well, you know, what can I do?
Right.
I guess my most significant thing that I would like them to do is understand that even as one person, that they can make an impact, and that their impact may be a dollar, maybe $5, maybe $10. It may be service. It may be cut and paste the HTML on our website for our logo and put our logo into your website. It may be a variety of those. But my answer, I think I was motivated one day. I was in a political arena, and I'm not even going to tell you where. I just was in a political environment. And this dude said to me, I'll give you 3 minutes to talk about music and arts education and 5 minutes for a question and answer area. I said, okay, cool. So I did that. And then in the first question, this lady says to me, you know, and she looked like she had $50,000 hanging from her ears. And she said, you know, I, Mr. Melfi, I don't believe I've ever seen anybody present something so passionate about music and arts education. She goes, and I agree, because I think that's really cool. And I'm like one voice, and I'm trying to figure out, like, what would you have me do? I'm one voice. What would you have me do? And I thought about it for a minute. It seemed like it was in it, but it was probably like only 4 seconds, but it seemed like it was forever.
Yeah, I understand that.
I said, Jesus Christ only had one voice. Look what he did. He ain't even around anymore. He's still talking to those of us that will listen.
Man, good answer.
Dude, this was like a morgue all of a sudden. And out of nowhere, after it was all over, I had like these Muslim brothers coming up to me, and these guys who were, you know, Jewish folks and Catholic folks, everyone. I mean, I had about 200 people come up to me. And they said, you know what, despite the religious statement, you drove the point home, like,
home
huge. Run. Yeah. And it was like, I was like, well, think about it, man. The guy's a rock star.
Right.
Said, you know,
he really is.
You can't go anywhere in the world and ask somebody if they don't know this guy. I mean, you know,
right.
I mean, some people don't believe in what he did, or if he was even existing or whatever, but everybody knows him. It's like Bon Jovi.
Right.
It's like Usher, man. I mean, people know. I said, you know, the dude is a rock star. I said, so the point that I want to drive home here, I guess, with people on your in your audience is that, you know, I know that we relentlessly would love to be able to contribute something to this problem. We don't know how much money we waste every day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how much money do you waste driving to and from the 7-Eleven to get a six-pack of beer or
a
cigarettes or whatever it is you do, you know? And
it's adding
instead
up,
of driving,
yeah, you're right.
Instead of driving your kids to the school 3 times in a day, how about you plan your day out and drive them once? Take that extra $12 gas and donate it to MuseArt. Everything that you donate to MuseArt, no matter what it is tax deductible anyway. We are a 501c3, so it's a tax deductible donation. And you know, I'm not that that means anything, but in the point being that if one person like Jesus Christ could create that kind of an impact, so can you, Mike, in Cincinnati, Ohio. Okay? I mean, you just got to believe. You have to believe. And that's the thing, is we have to believe that music and arts is important to the development of our children's minds. Think about this for a minute. What would society be like if for the next 30 years we don't have music and arts in schools?
Yeah. I couldn't imagine.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. You know, I asked a 15-year-old. I asked a 15-year-old kid that one day, and she couldn't answer the question. She was like almost in tears. She was like,
right.
You know, like, what? Why would you do that? I said, well, I'm not saying that it would do it. I'm just asking you what it would be like. And she goes, Who would ever do that? And I was like, yeah, okay. So I started mobilizing kids all over the country. They all have the same attitude. Who would allow that to happen?
Man.
So that's what I want people to get out of this interview, is don't allow that to happen. Get into the groove. Get off your butt. You know, help us out here. This is not something that one group can do. The entire world needs to step up. And in America, there's 350 million Americans. Okay, we just need 50 of those, which is 12%. I mean, it's like, hello? It's like 12% to start up and say, okay, here's a dollar, here's $5, here's $10, whatever their comfort zone is. Go to the website. There's a donation button there. You can get a free newsletter to keep us up to, you know, keep you up to speed on what's going on, how we're gonna move this. But think about 50 million Americans putting $5 up. That's $250 million that we could lobby in Washington, D.C. with and say, you will make this a mandated curriculum in our schools across the United States, and you will do it now, because we, the people, have made our statement. And it's as simple as that. We got to mobilize them. We got to get them to realize, you know, again, without turning it to a negative sort of place. Look at Facebook, for example. Facebook and Google were the two responsible parties. And in Egypt, not long ago, they were done. They were done with their government. They were done with the government. Okay, so they showed up and they came in with guns and all kinds of crap for like the first 2 days. And then somebody said, we're doing this wrong. We need to bring everybody here and we need to leave our guns at home. And that's exactly what they did. They brought millions of people through Facebook and Google to the same place at the same time without a gun in their hand, with a common denominator saying, we don't want this anymore. And 18 days later, the regime fell.
Wow.
Okay. So in the United States of America, we have the same ability. If we believe, we're not trying to, you know, take our regime down. That's not what we're trying to do at all. We're just trying to get them to pay attention to, don't take the tools away from our children. If we know that it stimulates their brain and we know that it gives them a better reading comprehension, and you're complaining that we can't compete globally and that they're graduating and they don't know how to read, then give them back the tool.
Right.
You know, so that's what we want them to get from the whole concept. It's mobilize them. We want them all to get involved. We want the mailing list to get involved. We want their dollars. We want their service. We want everything that they think that they can offer us. We want.
Definitely.
It's not always about the money. It's not always about the money. It's about unity. I mean, who wouldn't want the well-being of a child? I mean, there are those out there that do that. I mean, don't misunderstand me, but 9 out of 10 of us would probably hurt you if you got in the way of our child, you know?
You got that right.
You know? I mean, it's as simple as that. I don't care who we are. You
right.
Think this, you know, we all want something better for our kids.
Mm-hmm. So I understand you put that fight with a name on it and make it positive, call it MuseArt, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, what would the world be like you say, what would it be like without music, without being able to learn about music and to understand it and to incorporate it in our daily lives? There'd be a lot of robots out here without that, so...
And money shouldn't be an issue. Money should not be an issue, Mike. Kids should just have this as mandated curriculum. It should not be for the interested party or the wealthy. It's as simple as that. There's a lot of poor people, man, that, you know, there's more poor people than there are wealthy, okay?
Right.
And there's more middle-class Americans than there are wealthy. And their kids should not be sacrificed just because they don't have money or just because, you know, they're not interested. We need to drive that interest. I went to Catholic school all my life, and I didn't have a choice, man. I had to study music, like it or not.
So like it or not, huh? I went to Akron Public, but we had music classes. I don't think they really have them much now, but we did have them.
Yep.
Would you like to give any shout-outs or thank yous to anyone that has helped you along the way?
You know, my heart always goes out to, first, my Creator God. I mean, you know, every time I give it to God, and I thank God that my biggest shout out to the United States of America people is that no one thing, God has a sense of humor. I say that because He picked out a renegade like me to come at this baby. And I like, you know, so I always thank God first, and then there are, you know, a series of people that are in my life that are helping me do this. Obviously, Ken Craig and We Are the World, and my beautiful partner Ken. We've been partners for years now, and I love that man. And then my other partner Bob Siner, who was the president of MCA Records, and, you know, Philip Kakiran, who is our producer and our, you know, creative director for our catalog. And then obviously Malia, there's Mike Cash out on the East Coast, and Gloria, you know, Napoli. There's a ton of people that are, I know that I'm forgetting people, okay, there, but there are tons and tons and tons of people.
Definitely.
But at the end of the day, this is all about the children and those kids that participated in each one, teach one, you know. I mean, the most recent was Emily Keener, who was on Mike Huckabee's show, and, you know, she has a direct ability to communicate with her voice this song, and I was so inspired when I heard it, and I was like, wow, holy cow, this girl, it can go out there and create an impact. And all these kids, it's you know, the children are my motivation, and I'm excited to know that I get the opportunity to really put this in place as a soldier of God, and that He's rounded up this amazing team.
Man,
I guess that, I'm sure there's more out there, dude, but, you know.
Oh, yeah, we're all slowly being recruited, you know. I mean, this is something that I don't see something like this possibly failing unless the people just give up entirely, and I don't think that's going to happen. Mankind is still moving forward, so nobody, we got, like you said, you got one person as yourself that's not, hasn't given up, so there's still hope. So,
There was a 9-year-old boy that came to me, and he said that there is plenty of hope as long as we all have plenty of faith. I was like, are you
9-year-old child
in the
mouth of babes?
Out of the mouths of babes. And he was like, don't worry about each one, teach one. Plenty of hope as long as we all have plenty of faith. I was like, okay then, buddy.
Right.
Yeah.
Amazing.
They're out there.
Awesome.
They're in Akron, Ohio. They're in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
They're in Brooklyn. They're everywhere.
If you or anyone else you know would like to have their poetry, music featured on the Pro Flow for Show, hosted by Mr. Mad Max, check us out, www.maxheat.com. Don't be left out. Don't be the last to know. Spread the word. It's Pro Flow M4 Radio.